It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Car Doctor Show. This is the Car Doctor, Kevin Raymond, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106. Or you can send us a text to that same number, 343-0106. Show is brought to you by UJ Chevrolet, Mobile's oldest GM dealer, Alabama Pipe and Supply, and Ed's Seafood Shed.
Fabulous Seafood Shed and the new Squid Ink.
Yep.
On Dolphin Street. I got to go down and partake. I know it's not a tattoo shop now.
Did you get you something to eat there?
I got to go down and get something to eat. You can't get nothing to eat in no tattoo shop.
No.
Yeah, Pete Bloom called in on the cooking show Sunday morning.
Oh, he did?
And talking about Squid Ink. And so I asked him, I said, well, for a first-time visitor to the restaurant that's not sure what Squid Ink actually is, do you have some regular food items? And he said, yeah, you got to come try out our fantastic burgers. And so we're looking forward to going down to Squid Ink.
Yep. They have an awesome deal down there. But
your headphones aren't working?
Nope.
I'm hearing mine.
Yeah, I'm hearing mine now. But I guess we should have checked these a little earlier.
I think the guys ahead of us turned them down.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah,
well, mine's working now. I wiggle the wire. The wire be loose.
You all should have volume now.
Yeah, we got volume now.
Okay.
Yeah, we can actually come down just a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah,
there you go.
But we do have a caller
so
on
picky.
My piece of eardrum is being rattled.
I'm going
caller.
Deaf as it is. So.
Yes. Hey, Charlie, it's Ron Reams.
Well, hey, Ron.
I thought it was somebody.
Oh, cush. Hush, Tom.
Hey, don't call in here expecting respect.
I know it, man.
From you three.
Next thing I know, it'll be Ricky Barnes calling.
Really?
Yeah.
Listen, Kevin, I've been trying to reach you for the last few days.
Well, I got one message from you, and I called the number that you left, and it was not you. So I don't know.
Other guy.
I don't know what happened there.
I couldn't reach you then. I'm going to tell you what my problem is now, and maybe you can tell me what I need to do. I suspect it is a blown fuse, but you know how good I am at car repair.
Right.
None. The deal is this, and I told Tom about this the other day when I was talking to him. My odometer on that 2000 Buick Century I have, 19 years old now, and has about 80,000 miles on it. That car, the odometer lights up.
Right.
It is a digital type thing, and it has stopped working. I can't tell how many miles I got on the car. The lights are out.
Yeah.
What could that be?
Well, and it's going to be in the cluster itself, because it's not going to be a fuse, because it's only powered up by one power source. So if everything else is working, it's going to be in the cluster in that LED section of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's fairly common failure. Honestly, if it was me, unless it just absolutely drives you insane, I'd leave it alone.
Because
you're going to have to, get a replacement cluster and have it programmed and done with the right mileage, or send that one off and have it repaired. And either way is a pricey, fix, just to know how many miles you have on your car.
Kevin, just because the lights went out, though, on it, does that mean it's no longer recording the miles?
No, it's still recording the miles. It's doing everything it's supposed to do. You're just not seeing it. And a lot of times, if you'll reach up there and just kind of tap on it close to it, a lot of times it'll light back up for a few minutes.
I'll have to try that.
Yeah, it's probably a bad connection or the driver in there's gone bad.
I know the driver's bad.
Having to guesstimate how long I got to go before I get my next oil change.
Yeah,
so,
that one should have an oil life monitor on it, so you could probably, just reset it. And, I'm not a big fan of going by it, but you could,
What was that again?
That one should have an oil life monitor on it.
Uh-huh.
And you can reset that and just live by that,
Oh, okay.
And that would get you in the neighborhood, because it's still counting the miles. It's just you can't read them.
All right. So. All right, guys. I appreciate the advice, and it's good talking to all three of you.
Yeah. All right, Big Ron. I'm going to come down and register again. Can I register again to vote? That way I can vote twice?
Yes. Well, no, you can't vote twice.
Oh. Well, sure. If I register twice.
You can only vote once.
As long as you don't bring an ID.
You don't vote early and vote often.
But that slogan has such a nice ring to it.
Yep. Yeah, doesn't it, Charlie?
Hey, it's great to hear from you, Ron.
Good to hear from you, too, buddy.
All right. Come see us.
Talk to you later.
All right.
Yeah. Thanks, Ron.
Bye-bye.
Ron Reams.
Well, you know, if you show up without an ID, you can, be able to vote as many times as you want to.
Hey, Tom, you're the only one that caught on to what Kevin said about the driver going bad.
Yeah, yeah, the driver was bad already. But I know that he's talking about a different driver.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right. So you're talking about the driver for the
but
LED.
But just for the heck of it, off the top of your head, do you have a ballpark figure of where that would be? I mean, are we talking about $200 or are we talking about five?
You're probably $500 to $600.
$500 to $600.
Yeah. And like I say, you know, it's irritating. You know, you don't know how far you've been between oil changes,
right,
that kind of thing.
Right.
You know, you can kind of, if you're still driving the same way you normally do, you know how often you had to go in and get your oil changed, you know, so you can kind of do it by time. You can keep up a lot of different things, and you know, to kind of figure out how.
That being said, you know, if he's knowing Ron, and he's kind of like me, well, I can't see me now. But Charlie, the amount of miles that they're putting on their cars in a calendar year, at the most, they probably want to change it, in the middle of the year and at the end of the year.
Right.
You know,
I mean,
about 1,000 a month on average.
Ron said he had about 80,000 on a
19 model. Yeah,
a 99 model. I think a
2000.
So it's 20 years old and got 80,000 miles.
Oh yeah.
It. So if you do the math, about once a year is probably fairly accurate. You know?
Yeah.
So.
There you go. And he's probably not driving it over 3,000 or 4,000 miles a year.
Right. Or if you just go wild and do it twice a year, you know. It's good insurance.
There you go. There you go.
Let's see. We did have a text message here from Robert. Texted in a few weeks ago about my 2001 Mercury Cougar misfiring. I wanted to say thanks for the advice. It was the fuel injector that was the problem. Thanks again. Great show, guys.
Hoorah! Yep. Yes.
Always good to hear that we get one right.
Yeah, your hat ain't not going to fit anymore.
Score one for the car doctor.
That's right. His hat will never fit again.
That's right. But, Yeah,
let me ask you this one. How about a 2016 Chevy Camaro that the battery keeps dying overnight?
Yeah, and what was going on with that one? The it had codes in there, and just to highlight how hard it is to find a battery draw on a vehicle, it actually left codes and found the code. You start following the code, and it is for a power shorted to an ignition one circuit. So basically the power is not going off on the ignition circuit when you shut the car off, which that's keeping all the modules awake in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing tells it to shut off.
Okay. You know,
the motor would shut off, but it did not turn off all the modules in the car. So it had like an 8-amp draw sitting there. Just wasn't going to go away, and 8 amps overnight, it'd pretty well kill the battery.
Okay. So, yeah. That's a pretty good draw.
We got to digging, got to chasing, and two different modules, the engine control and the the transmission control and the chassis control modules had code set in for that. So yeah, they tell you to go to that module, check and see, and if you don't find a voltage on that wire, it's going to be that module, and basically they're sending you to two modules, So we get to digging, looking around. What it ends up being is a totally separate module that's on that circuit. The only way we found it was I just had to go in and follow the circuitry for that circuit, find out exactly what was on it and how many modules were on it, and then just go to each and every one of them.
You're talking about a hell of a lot of time.
Oh, yeah. And found it. It was the heated and cooling seat module for the passenger side seat.
For one seat.
And it was basically putting power back on the ignition circuit and and keeping everything powered up when it wasn't supposed to.
Well, so. But, you know, in the history of over the years now, we think, well, okay, you got a code, you get that code, and then you go to that part and you just replace that part. Well, you know, it's like you did. You had a code, but to go check all of the modules that were connected to that code, you had to actually physically check the ohms and the voltage that was on each one of those modules.
And I had to go to the voltage to each one of the modules and see if it was still there once I unhooked that module. So it was interesting.
I'll be darned. But you know, and then we wonder why you can't just pay an hour to get something like that
exactly.
fixed.
Exactly. We're going to take a break and let you hear from our fine sponsors, and we'll be back after these messages.
Went out to play. Well, this is the inside story, and I'm here to say it was a kid that was driving that Model A. It's got a Lincoln motor, and it's really souped up, and that Model A body makes it look like a pup. It's got 12 cylinders, uses them all with an overdrive that just won't stall.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line.
Well, we better get started here before Tom starts singing.
Yeah, so, I couldn't hear a tune in a bucket.
I want to welcome everybody back to The Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Raywinkle along with Tom Claxton. Any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. But, you know, we've actually had some new incentives come out this month,
yeah,
the first of the month on our truck sales. Well enough that one of my buddies went and bought him another Duramax diesel in 2019.
Woo!
Traded in a 16 model, which he was very happy with, but just the timing was right and the deal was right. So,
well, that'd be a good buy for somebody. Go get that 16.
The 16 is in very good shape. Very nice truck. But and it is, I don't know if it's on the line yet, but it's going to be shortly. So,
great.
But, you know, it's they've got a very good selection out there right now. Still having a little trouble getting Malibus right now. They're still building them, but we can't get our hands on them. It's a very popular little car. Yeah, we can find them every now and then, and we've got several ordered, you know, quite a few ordered coming in, but, you know, wouldn't hurt to come by and look, see what we do have.
They've
got some
that is so neat.
Really good deals on them.
Yeah. Do they need to ask for anybody in particular if they go there, or they'll just the salesman will see them on the lot?
I promise you will be greeted if you get on the parking lot.
Oh, yeah, quickly.
It's just like any other dealership. They're going to come out there and see you, but Mr. Brian Smith is our sales manager. And
Good guy.
Yep. We'll treat you right. He does a great job and very friendly staff. So.
Hey, Kevin, when you talked about your friend trading in a 2016 truck, it goes through, and I'm just wondering if that's done in your shop area, but it goes through some quality checks and cleans up and all of that before it goes on the line, doesn't it?
No matter what kind of trade we get, whether it be a we'll buy some rental cars that have already been through a recondition process after they were pulled out of rental service. But before anything hits our lot, it goes through our shop, and we go through all the inspections. We check everything. It goes through our detail department and gets cleaned up. And before it ever hits the lot.
Well, you can't put your name on it as far as the warranty.
Right.
In fact, that those items are checked unless you physically check them.
Well, and that's the thing is I don't care who checks what. We're going to put our hands on it first before it hits our lot. So, and then that, to me, you can't stand behind something you don't know what it is.
There you go.
So, yeah. But we do have a caller online. Caller, you with us?
Go ahead.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, what can we do for you?
I have a 2011 Toyota Tacoma with about 68,000 miles on it.
Okay.
My question is, when do you recommend replacing a timing chain on a vehicle like that?
If that one is a chain, there's not a recommended interval. It's only if you're starting to have an issue. If it is a belt, it would be in your owner's manual under the maintenance schedule. I think most of those are somewhere around 100,000 miles now.
Okay.
So I believe that one is a chain.
Most vehicles have a chain and a belt.
If you have a chain, you will not have a belt. It's one or the other. So it would be more than likely. Usually, you can open the hood and look at the front of the motor, and if it has a plastic cover, you know, that's covering up the belt,
right.
You know, or a plastic cover over the front part of the motor, it's going to be a belt. If you don't see a plastic cover there, it's going to be an internal chain. So
okay.
Yeah, those usually last, you know, years and years. That's, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you'd have to be looking at 150,000 miles or so before you would even consider worrying about that.
As long as you're changing your oil like you should, they should last 150,000 miles without an issue whatsoever. So.
Okay. Well, I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank you.
I appreciate you listening.
Is that plastic cover going to be true on most all of those motors?
Pretty much. There's a few out there that have a hard metal cover over them, but most all of them have a plastic cover of some sort covering the timing belts. Yeah.
Well, what we're really saying then is, if it's got a plastic cover on it, then there's not an oil base behind that.
Right.
It's got to be a dry pocket.
Right. It has to be a dry place for the belt. We don't have any out there that are a wet belt.
Right.
We use wet belt on some race car stuff, that kind of thing. But passenger cars, they don't use a wet belt.
So if it's got a steel case or an aluminum case on the front of it, it's going to probably be running in an oil bath. Mm-hmm. And in that regard, it's going to have a chain and
right.
the slides that are on the chain. What do they call those?
The tensioners and the,
right.
and the guides.
And tensioners and guide. Guides is right. What I was calling a slide. But
right.
the guide, it just keeps the belt from setting up harmonics in it is all it does.
Yeah, you know, and the really, if we found that if you change your oil and use the oil that you're supposed to be mm-hmm. using, you don't have time and chain problems. You
right.
know?
Okay.
If you do have time and chain problems, I can pretty much guarantee that you haven't changed it when you're supposed to.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There you go.
So, yeah, it's just kind of runs hand in hand, you know.
Well, what about a 2015 GMC 1500 pickup? It's got a real bad shutter when you're driving it around 55, 60 mile an hour.
Yeah, and that one was it had a torque converter failure, the torque converter clutch failure, and it was letting it shutter. It was had some issues. You know, that would be a 6-speed transmission. Now the 8-speeds have a different concern that we've seen on some of them, that it is a fluid issue that is causing it, and we've been. Had really good results with changing the fluid to a new HP synthetic Mobil 1 transmission fluid, and it's done a very good job of stopping that shutter. So
the transmission fluid, would that be synthetic?
Yeah,
Mobil 1.
Hmm, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it does a good job, and we've that issue has gone all the way up through. Basically, the first of this year, they come out with the new fluid, and so the 8-speed stuff before that, that was built before that, you know, a lot of them are having that issue, and we've had to change fluids on them.
Well, now, are you running a different fluid in 8-speeds than you are in the 6?
Yes. Yes, it is a different fluid. The 6-speed is not a synthetic. So
the 6-speed is not?
Right. 6-speed does not have the synthetic.
So when the factory built the new 8-speed transmissions, they figured that the 6-speed had proven itself in the field, and whatever fluid was there should sustain the 8-speed, but it didn't work.
Well, no, they actually went with a synthetic fluid, but what they failed to take into account was that the fluid was hydroscopic, which means that it pulls in moisture.
Okay, like brake fluid
like
did.
Like brake fluid did, and that slight amount of moisture was what was causing the shutter.
Well, it would mess up the steels in the fibers, or does it have fibers?
This got all that in it, but it was not enough to do any kind of damage or even see it with the naked eye.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just enough to cause an issue with the way the converter locked up. So,
yeah, because, you know, if you get any kind of water in a regular transmission back over the years, it would break down the fibers on the fiber clutches.
Right. It would start turning the fiber loose from the clutches and causing major issues. And you'd know right away when you went to tear it down because the all the paper gaskets and stuff on the plates and that would be stuck to them, and you'd almost have to grind it off to get the gaskets off of it. So where normally you would just unbolt it and peel them right off, they'd come off and not stick at all. But you know, it's we've been in a couple of the 8-speeds and you know, have not seen any sign of any kind of moisture, but the scientists and that engineers, you know, they have better tools than I do to be able to tell whether it's there or not. So
I want to talk to you about some diesel motors and stuff and all. When we come back, I run into a scenario on a boat that my nephew's crewing now.
Yeah,
and they're having problems with the motors on it that are diesels. And you just mentioned something there that could possibly be the problem on these motors and the engines, whatever you want to call it. They're diesel 16 cylinders.
Yeah.
$1 million.
Oh, yeah.
For a motor and a boat.
Right.
Well, you mean, what the hell? A boat only costs $12 million. I mean,
that's right. Yeah, it'd be a nice motor, no doubt. But we also have a text message here that we'll cover when we get back. But we're starting to get close to our break time here. But, it amazes me how much, just like an outboard. My brother's got a boat with three 350s on the back of it. And you're looking at $60,000, $80,000 for a motor. You know, it's more for that one motor than what I can go buy my truck that I'm driving right now, the 19 model Silverado, with a motor in it.
If you got big boats, baby, you got big pockets.
Apparently they figure that. But anyway, we're going to take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
I got my diesel wound up, and she's running like I never before. There's a speed zone ahead of it, all right. I don't see a cop in sight. 6 days on the road and I'm gonna make it home tonight.
It's The Car Doctor with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton on FM Talk 106.5. Call Kevin and Tom now at 343-0106 with your car maintenance and repair questions. The doctor is in.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is the Car Doctor, Kevin Ramick, along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call, 343-0106, or send us a text to that same number, 343-0106. But we do actually have a couple texts here. 98 Silverado Security will not let the engine run only when it rains.
What?
Will not let it run only when it rains, not security computer. Engine turns over, security light stays on. When sun comes out and heats up, starts great.
Tony, you got to be kidding now. It's a sunshine car.
Well, and I have to ask the question whether it's actually putting a security light up. You know, and that's...
Is that possible? I don't think I've ever heard of that.
I quit saying never.
Oh, yeah. You quit saying that. Okay, I guess so.
Because anything is possible, I guarantee you. I've seen it all now.
Sunshine car.
Well, I say I have because they keep showing me new stuff. But, you know, it's hard to say. On a 98 model, I'm trying to think that, you know, they did have some issues with some water leak issues up around the cowl area. And I'd have to know whether anything's getting wet in inside the truck. Sounds like a harness is getting wet somewhere, and it's messing with the signal going from the key to the security.
The modules wouldn't be in a position where they could get wet.
Well, they're not supposed to be, and they're all supposed to have weather pack seals around them and all that kind of stuff. So technically,
have to be in the harness there.
Yeah, technically, it's should be able to just submerge that module and not hurt it if it's anything mounted outside. The ones inside usually don't have weather pack connectors, you know, because they're not supposed to be wet anyway. But and that's usually where we have our problems is, you know, if water gets by something and gets behind the dash or down on the fuse blocks on the side of the dash, you know, it can cause issues. And then once it dries out, it can go back to working.
All right. Yeah. Here we go again. We were talking about our fabulous codes and computers and all a while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Will any of that show up on a diagnostic machine and checking your ECM?
It might.
Or your body module?
It may be one of those things you have to have while it's raining so it doesn't crank. Because that's what a lot of people don't understand is even though it has a problem, you know, if it cranks and runs and it comes in, everything's doing what it's supposed to do, when we check it, it's going to check good.
If it ain't broke, you can't fix it.
Right. Got to finish breaking it.
Right.
We're bringing in when it is going to act up. So, yeah, that's going to be an interesting one to find. But one of the first things I would do would be check to make sure there's no moisture getting inside the vehicle anywhere. If there is, need to backtrack that and look and see where it's coming from. So.
Well, it'd be interesting for the person that sent that to us when you do find out what it is. How about giving us a call back? It will it'd be something that it's not going to bother me either way, but because I'm basically retired. But
right.
Kevin might want to put it in his bank, his brain up there to recall that particular scenario.
Yeah. Yeah, unfortunately, I'm getting to the point where I'm having to push stuff out to try and remember things. So it's
you having to swap hard drives in your brain daily?
Yeah, the memory space is getting a little limited.
You come up with a problem, say, what year was that? Let me get the right hard drive in here. Hold on a minute, I got to change hard drive in this computer.
Exactly. But let's see, we also have one. How much faith do y'all have in Mobil 1's extended life synthetic oil? I like the Mobil 1.
I do too,
Extended life oil.
I got it in my car.
You know, I'm not a huge fan of just, you know, going forever between oil changes.
You don't have to.
You know, and that's the thing is, you know, I'm good with going 5,000 or 6,000 miles between changes if you're running a synthetic oil. But there's really not much point in trying to take it much past that because, you know, oil is the cheapest thing. Oil change is the cheapest thing you can do to a car to maintain it.
Cheapest maintenance factor that you've got.
Yeah. And
Don't do it. It's costly.
Well, it's very costly. And I see motors all the time that have failed or have failures in them that could have been prevented if the oil was changed the way it really needed to be. You know, it's
that's the lifeblood of the engine, you know. That's let's face it. You couldn't run metal to metal. Nope. So to run metal against metal, you've got to have an oil film.
Right.
So that's why you run the motor oil in there. And so if you've got a deteriorated oil, then you're not going to get that slipperiness between those two pieces of steel, and something's going to wear.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you get oil that starts turning darker and getting to where it's not clear or light colored like it normally is coming out of the bottle, it's because you're getting carbon built up in that oil. And carbon is not smooth.
No.
I mean, it's rough.
No, you look at it under a microscope, you can see how rough it is.
Yeah.
It's like sand.
Right.
It's just black sand.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a good thing, and you get too much of it built up, and you're going to be doing damage to the bearings.
Right. So. You're going to be replacing some metal components because of the lack of lubricity.
Exactly.
I like that word.
Is that a word?
Woo, baby, yeah. I thought he made it up. I don't know.
A Claxtonism.
That's a Claxtonism, baby.
I'm going to ask you next week if you can remember that word.
Well, if you remember, if you could say Alzheimer's five times real fast, then you don't have it. So.
Oh, okay.
I've been practicing that.
Been practicing.
Yeah. Okay. Alzheimer's.
We do have a caller online. Caller, you with us?
Yes, sir.
What can I do for you?
Y'all talking about that Sunshine GM truck?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had a 2000 Silverado, still do. Mm-hmm. And when I bought it, the guy said, I got cap and rotor and plug wires and plugs and all in there that I ain't put on yet. He said every time it rains, it goes to skipping and missing. Well, I had all that stuff put on there, and every time it rained, it still went to missing.
Yep.
After about 6 months, on the way to work one morning, it just died.
Mm-hmm.
And we towed it on behind the shop, and I got to looking around and noticed that the coil had white spots on each side where it was shortened out to the frame.
Right.
So, yeah, those seals on behind the General Motors truck hoods don't seal very tight. And then right. when you start getting water in that electrical system, mm-hmm. it can cause all kind of nightmares. Now, I don't know about the security part, but it can definitely get in your ignition and cause problems.
It certainly can, and that was what I was going to go with whenever you got to talk about that, was that one of the key things people forget to do is look and make sure that seal is still in place and still pliable to where it seals off fairly well. I mean, it's not going to totally seal off, but it should stop most of the water from getting down to that end of the engine compartment. If it does, it really saves a lot of trouble. And I've also seen on those trucks to where that water drips off right there, it will actually drip on top of the transmission dipstick, and we can get moisture in the transmission because of it.
Say so, what?
Yeah. Seen it happen
like that.
Well, and it's a locking, you know, dipstick and all that, but if water will find a way in, so it can find its way.
Well, you know, that's a Chevrolet now, and I realize the gentleman's still on the line, probably. But one of the big problems that I saw in when I was running the shop was on the new Ford pickup trucks, where the water would drip down and drop down into that spark plug hole.
Right.
And it would rust that plug and all that in there, and mm-hmm. that plug would foul out.
Yeah, and we had the same issue with the Trailblazer, the inline motor in the Trailblazer. It was the number 4 cylinder, I believe, was when you get a misfire in it, you pull that coil out of it, and it's a coil on plug ignition, and the coil actually seals off to the valve cover, supposed to, and keep the moisture out. Well, that seal would get old and hard, and it would let moisture in, and you know, you pull it out, and all of a sudden you got a cavity full of water down there where the spark plug is.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could blow
they
it out and drive
it. Little quirks about them, and Nissan Altimas are terrible about the valve cover seal to the spark plug well hole.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, the oil starts building up around the spark plug until the next thing you know, that cylinder is shortened out. Mm-hmm. And you can't replace the seals on those. You have to order a whole new valve cover, $75 or more.
Sounds like you've been there, brother.
I
worked on a few.
There you go. Okay.
Yeah, I was going to mention that. I've had a few of them that I've had to replace because of that. I mean, it's kind of crazy. You can buy the gasket, but you can't buy the seals where the valve cover seals off to the chamber for the spark plug.
They did that on purpose.
Yeah.
Some of them are molded into the cover, and some of them you can replace. It depends on the brand, and I think Toyota is replaceable maybe, but Nissan isn't. But And it may depend on your models. I don't know.
I'm sure.
I worked on my daughter's car, and then my uncle called up. And his wouldn't go, and I said, "Well, I'll bet you your spark plugs are covered in oil." And his neighbor went over and pulled it out, and he said, "How did you know that? That is exactly what was going on. One in four was covered in oil."
Yeah,
I've been there, done that, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
Got the receipts for it too, huh?
Yep.
That's all right.
All right. Well, we appreciate
y'all have a good evening. I just wanted to call in and let you know my old Chevy. It had the rainy day problems too.
Yep.
Right. Well, I have those problems now at my age.
Right. I understand. Well, I appreciate you calling in.
All right. Enjoy the show.
Thank you. Sir.
Thank you.
I'm not worried about melting, but I might lump up.
Exactly. Let's see. We got another text message. 2010 Suburban 6-speed. 5.3 liter automatic transmission. Drivability issues. Shifts too soon. Torque converter locks up too soon. Any way to change the shift point or make the torque converter not lock up so soon? No, not really. Yeah, there's aftermarket programs you could do to change all that. But if everything is working the way it should, then it's going to shift where it wants to and needs to. Those are pre-programmed. It's not done by, like the older ones, where you could adjust a detent cable on a transmission.
Yeah, so it's not an adjustment factor then.
No. or vacuum modulator or anything like that. There's no adjustment. That's one thing the government just kind of cut us out of is doing any kind of adjustment on that. So, hey, it is what it is, but usually they do a very good job. Normally we don't have too much trouble with them, you know, locking up too or shifting too soon. Yeah. And I would have to kind of ask if that's only when you're light throttle or if you're in throttle hard, does it shift out and you know, run on out like it's supposed to? So you may have an issue there, but if it's seems to be shifting in about where it's supposed to, then there's really not much you can do about it. So we'll take a break and let you hear from our sponsors, and we'll be back.
Well, I got my first truck when I was 3, drove 100,000 miles on my knees, hauled marbles and rocks and thought twice before I hauled a Barbie doll bed for the girl next door. She tried to pay me with a kiss and I began to understand there's something women like about a pickup man. When I turned 16, I saved a few $100. My first car was a pickup truck. I was cruising the town, and the first girl I see was Bobby Joe Gentry, the homecoming queen. She flagged me down and climbed up in the cab and said, I never knew you were a pickup man. You can set my truck on fire and roll it down a hill, and I still wouldn't trade it for a Coupe de Ville. I got an 8-foot bed that never has to be made. You know, if it weren't for trucks, we wouldn't have tailgates. I met all my wives in traffic jams, and just something women like.
And welcome back to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kim Remick along with Tom Claxton. If you have any questions, give us a call or send us a text, 343-0106. Let's see, Dave from Gulf Shores has just a comment, I guess, here. I don't like the Dodge as much since Fiat bought them, and Nissan since they have merged with Renault. But can't say I really disagree with
him.
I'm
on his page, too.
So
there's just something negative about mergers, period.
Well,
somebody comes out on the losing end.
Funny how, to me, and I'm not bad-mouthing anybody, but it's kind of like a rinky-dink company buying out a big company, and then they pass the rinky-dink on to the big company.
Right. And fire half the people.
Right, yeah.
Well, you know, and Fiat is a huge, huge company.
Oh, they're big out there, yeah.
Bigger than Dodge, obviously.
But
you know,
yeah,
but
there's,
you know,
it's not Dodge,
and you know, they do things different or did things different than what we were doing here in the States, and
mm-hmm.
you know, there was a time that was probably a good thing, you know, but over the last 15, 20 years, whatever, the U.S. market has turned around and is building a quality car again. Back in the 70s, 80s, they were building junk. I mean, mm-hmm. I'll be the first to admit that.
Had a 76 Pontiac that had a junk paint job on it, too.
Well, you can't paint a car with a pine top, Charlie.
Or without using mm-hmm. some kind of primer.
Yeah, well, I mean, they were having issues with the paint peeling.
Yeah,
I had a silver dollar size rust hole above the engine and above the windshield in a 2-year-old car.
Yeah.
They saw you coming, Charlie.
I guess.
Yep.
Well, and I'm sure they decided that that was a rock chip that started that, so no, it wasn't covered under warranty. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's kind of where all that usually goes. But In their infinite wisdom, at one time they were using galvanized metal around the windows, and that
because
the windows were always rusting out around
these cars. Yeah.
And the problem is they couldn't figure out how to make the paint stick to them. You know, because every one of them you saw in a couple of years, all the paint was flaked off around the windows.
Yeah, it wouldn't stick to galvanize.
Right. But and there's ways to make that happen too.
They went through a phase, evidently.
Oh, yeah.
Well, when they came out with all these plastic bumpers on cars, they was having trouble with the paint sticking on those.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have a problem with it originally from the factory.
Right.
But once you had to repair it, then they were having, in the first couple of years, they were having problems with that.
Plus, they couldn't hammer out the dings.
I know. I went to probably 4 or 5 of those schools and paint and body shop schools, you know, that and they were talking about. Now, this won't work like we did this way 30 years ago. Now, it won't work. Now, we got to do this. You know,
right.
This has got this chemical in it, and this has got this plastic's got this chemical in it.
And then how do you determine that chemical is? You got to check, you know, cut a piece off each one of them on the inside. And it was weird.
There's a
but
whole.
But there's a trick to it, and to it all. And they found out. They found out how it worked.
Yeah. And, you know, and the problem you have is you get to trying to repair a rubber bumper. And I don't know if anybody's ever tried to sand something flat that was flexible.
Yeah.
But that is almost impossible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have tried to do that over the years. I mean, we, you know, race cars and that, we use fiberglass components and thin metal components. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of structure to them. It's not like a passenger car.
Yeah, you don't rub on those hard.
Yeah, you start rubbing them on them hard, and you've reshaped them a little bit there. So it's you got to be careful. And, it's a
big dimples in them.
Yeah, and it's really hard to try and sand out and get something flat there. But, you know, and you have to keep the fiberglass thin so it does flex, because you don't want it to break every time you touch somebody, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the front end of those cars have been used to move other vehicles over.
Oh, well, that's
way.
What they're there for.
And, yeah. You know, we don't like have it. Horns, so you got to have something.
Well, yeah, you do.
Yeah.
You frame horns.
That's right. Exactly.
Frame horns.
Exactly.
And the frame boards on the front of the car, that's what you'd use to move those people over with. I was watching an old show a while ago with Earnhardt and Jeff Gordon there, and Earnhardt was showing him how those frame horns worked. You know?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I know I used to help Gerald Wilkerson out there at Speedway for several years, and you know, Gerald's, you know, one of the top drivers at Mobile International Speedway.
Oh, yeah.
Won more championships and races out there than anybody else, as far as I know. And
yeah, 12 or 13 championships, or 14.
Just at Mobile.
Yeah, just at Mobile.
Not counting Pensacola.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're out there one night and got into some kind of ruckus in the heat race, and you know, to run the feature, we had to pull the whole front end off the car. So basically, it's a frame, wheels, and a radiator sticking out front.
Mm-hmm.
And he gets up there, and you know, he's running second, and he gets up there to kind of nudge the guy in front of him.
Uh-oh.
And I'm on the radio. It says, "Hey, you do remember the only thing you got out front there is a radiator, right?"
So, don't nudge him with that radiator.
Right.
Wait a minute. Does nudging actually happen in the race?
It does. It does.
They give him a little love tap, Charlie.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, a little love tap. Hey, just, buddy, how you doing? Boop.
So you don't get points taken off for nudging.
No,
they don't
give
points, Charlie.
Oh, okay.
Well, see, some of these guys are a little indecisive when they're racing, you know, so you have to help them decide which lane they're going to be in.
Lead follower, get out of the
move
way.
Move the hell over.
Right. you can take low or you can take high, but
and
you're not taking both.
And
see,
if
I'm
you run up
you,
under him hard enough on the rear end, you can pick his rear tires up off the ground.
Yeah, yeah. It's happened. It has happened.
Mm-mm-mm.
I actually had an instance where I run up under the back of somebody, and my front bumper hung on the back under his back bumper, so we were kind of hooked together there for a little while.
Up.
Yeah, we was hooked up together for a little while. That was an interesting couple laps, I promise you.
You thought y'all were chained together.
Now, had he gone across the finish line with you hooked to his bumper, that'd mean you was in second place?
I was the second one to cross, but, you know, it He didn't want to try and shake me loose any worse than I was trying to shake him loose, because it wasn't going to be pretty for either one of us if we started spinning with like that. But it was not going to be pretty.
Those trees are not far enough away from the track.
No. Been there, done that, and we had a little discussion after that about we need to move some bumpers around where this don't happen no more.
Y'all wouldn't do that. No, you wouldn't ever have an argument or a little.
No, I mean, neither one of us were upset. You know, it all worked out, and luckily it was two drivers that knew what they were doing and could make it through that kind of situation without destroying everything in the field.
Yeah, but, car owners like that.
Yeah.
Always did.
Yeah.
Y'all come on in here and get in the pits, and you can sling them, you know, sling helmets and what have you. Don't tear up my damn car.
Right. There's times. For it.
Oh, yeah. There's other times I get on the radio. Take him out.
Exactly. Been there, done that, too.
Take him out. So next, I don't want to see him on the track again.
Next week, Tom's bringing the beer, and you're bringing the dip and chips, and I got the wings.
Yeah. Why not? Yeah.
For our little get
together. Yeah, no hot wings, though.
No, I don't like
hot wings. No hot wings. Just,
Yeah.
We get some Connecticut sausage. We'll get mild, okay?
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
There you go.
All right. We can handle all that. I'll get my smoker fired up. We'll have some.
Put that out there in the lobby.
Yeah, can we get a long cord to these microphones?
We'll just sit out in the yard and do the show.
I want to thank everybody for listening to the Car Doctor Show. This is Car Doctor Kevin Ramkel along with Tom Claxton. We will see you next week.
And to all of our veterans out there, big hoorah, baby. We couldn't do it without you.
And a sack of clothes, free and easy down the road I go. Hanging memories on the highline poles, free and easy down the road I go.